Members, just so you know the process for today, we have three bills on our calendar, or on our agenda for today. Today being committee deadline, it's my intention that we vote on all three of these bills. My hope is that we vote on these bills prior to 10 o'clock, all right? However, because today is the last day before the first deadline, we do have a room booked for this evening. The soonest we could get a room this evening is at 6:30, and so if necessary, we will continue this hearing at that time. But I hope and believe and trust we can get through the agenda by 10 o'clock. So, with no further ado, Representative Olson, welcome to the committee. Please move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Is this on?
We can hear you.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair, I would like to move... No. Aren't there? Oh. Mr. Chair, I just discovered that we don't have copies of the amendment. And,
Representative Olson, let's get to the bill and we'll ask the page to make copies, okay. All right? But for time's sake, let's get to the bill. And then when the amendment's ready, we'll take it up.
Just like I have.
Sure. Representative Olson.
I will move House Bill 867 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee.
Representative Olson moves that House File 867 is recommended to pass and be re-referred to K-12 Finance. Representative Olson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And there is an amendment coming. I apologize for that misunderstanding with counsel. I approved of the amendment and wasn't aware I needed to convey that. So we'll have that amendment to you, and it does correct a concern from the Minnesota School Boards Association. Last year, we passed this two other years before 2001 and 2003, and the concerns they raised then I've addressed in the first part of the bill. This bill currently requires school districts to establish a policy. We're eliminating that requirement so that there is no mandate, and it just simply is going to read that school districts shall permit grade-level instruction in the area of our American heritage and American founding documents. And that's the first part of the bill, members. And then there's a list of items to provide an example and for the public and for schools to follow, but not limited to. And then in paragraph B on page 2, we changed the word limit to censor, so it's very clearly stated twice before in the positive, and then in paragraph B it states that districts may not censor or restrain instruction in American or Minnesota state history. And then a provision for students, paragraph C, which assures students who may the right and opportunity to voluntarily choose to read or write and share a report or otherwise study a topic which is religious in nature, provided other students are provided with the same opportunity to freely choose a topic. So that's addressing the academic freedom needed for students. Mr. Chair, I regret that we weren't able to have the hearing the other day, as you know, and have Mr. Barton. We flew him in from Texas. It's a powerful testimony that he provided in the Senate and had good discussion there. They're considering the bill for the omnibus bill as well. And I regret that we weren't able to do that because of a floor session, but I have with me our Minnesota, David Barton, Mr. Michael Chapman, and I'd like to have him provide some testimony now. We are cutting back on our testimony, but if questions require it, we can dig into it a little bit more at the committee's discretion.
Thank you very much, Representative Olson. Mr. Chapman, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Michael Chapman. I'm a resident of Eden Prairie and a researcher of education, rare books, and curriculum. I've been doing that for about 10 years and have written several reviews for an organization in Texas called Educational Research Analysts. thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of this. As Representative Olson stated, David Barton is the expert. He brought testimony that indicated that this bill has passed in similar form in 12 states and is pending in about a dozen others. He also explained that he owns 70,000 rare books in his collection and uses those to compare curriculum as well. He stated also, sir, I just want to paraphrase what he said, that he wants to see the good, the bad, and the ugly of our history in schools, not just looking for a religious angle, not just looking for negatives or positives, but all of it. And that is his concern and the reason that he is moving on this bill. I'd like to summarize some of my materials just by showing you some of the curriculum that I've reviewed. I have some extensive written testimony that we did not get copies to you because I'm going to present a little more than since Mr. Barton is not here. I'm sorry, this is Mr. Barton, so I'm going to pass by him. I'm finding in the curriculum, sir, several items of censorship based on certain language of our history, and I've put some examples here just to show you, and you've got some of the PowerPoint with you. I just want to show you some of the typical censorship or omissions that I see in some of our founding documents, this being the Mayflower Charter. You notice the ellipses in the curriculum on the Mayflower Charter. When you look at the original document, what I show here in bold is actually what is in the textbook, and what is in standard framework is what has been left out. Under just the first two ellipses, you'll notice that they have removed a lot of writing that is religious in nature. Now, why this is anybody's guess. It could be just a simple fear of separation of church and state. It could be just a desire not to promote our religious history. But clearly, when you add these things back in, you see that it changes the very nature of the meaning of this document and changes the reason our founders sailed aboard the Mayflower. They had already escaped religious persecution and were living in Holland for 11 years at the time when they sailed here. And this document explains clearly that they came for other reasons. The next example I find is censored context. One of those censorships that take place is the fact of Alexis de Tocqueville. He's often used in curriculum and quoted. This is just volume one of his original. His abridged version is very thin and hardly shows the meat of what he had to say about America. This textbook, by the way, explains that Tocqueville, though impressed by equality of opportunity in American democracies, wondered how a society so devoted to materialism and the pursuit of individual self-interest could produce the civic spirit needed for government. Now, this quotation is taken clearly out of text. He was actually referring to Europe and France specifically. And in his uncensored version of Democracy in America, he wrote that amongst Americans, materialism may be said to hardly exist. In fact, the author's conclusion based on this biased material say that good citizenship for de Tocqueville, therefore, was nothing other than enlightened self-interest. Well, clearly, this is not de Tocqueville's conclusion. This is the author's conclusion based on this censored text. De Tocqueville never used the term enlightened self-interest. And in his volume, he explained the difference in America in his uncensored version that says the Americans combine the notions of Christianity and of liberty so intimately in their minds that it's impossible to make them conceive the one without the other. Now, it's not a question of whether we want our children to believe this to be true, sir. It's just simply a matter of not censoring the meaning of what this author had to say. We want to show history for what it's worth, and not censor it based on religious conclusions of other authors. Another censorship by omission is found in one of the most popular textbooks in social studies on American government, On the Roots of Our Government. The textbook authors conclude that Enlightenment thinkers in the American colonies were excited. Here they were, the first people in history to have the chance to create an entirely new government based on Enlightenment principles. Now, no textbook is required to give footnotes, and rarely do you see a footnote in an American school textbook. However, this textbook explained where it got this conclusion from. And that was a study that was conducted of 15,000 political writings published in America between 1760 and 1805. They took a tally of the people most often quoted by our founders and came up with a conclusion that it was Montesquieu, Hume, and Locke. This is a copy of the study published out of the University of Iowa back in 1988, or Iowa State University in 1988. And they conclude in the textbook that all three of these writers were part of the Enlightenment. People had natural rights, they said, that belonged to them as a condition of being human. Well, the first thing you'll notice that is if this is what our founders believed to be true, this is what they would have written in the Declaration of Independence, rather than our rights come from a creator and are inalienable, and that government's duty is simply to protect those rights. The actual study mentioned Montesquieu, Blackstone, and Locke as the top three writers. The first thing you notice is they skipped over Blackstone. Well, one of the reasons they did was because Blackstone wrote the Commentaries on the Laws of England and has been America's textbook on law for 200 years. He defined the law of nature as the law of God and said this law of nature, dictated by God himself, is, of course, superior in obligation to any other. It is binding over all the globe in all countries and at all times. No human laws are of any validity if contrary to this. Now, again, I want to point out that we're not suggesting that we must teach our children to believe these things, but to censor a study based on religious writings and conclusions to come to a completely different conclusion in the textbook is nothing short of censorship. The textbook goes on to explain that not only were the top three individuals quoted as 8.3% of the quotation, 7.9, and 2.9, but it also shows that the Bible was quoted 34% of the time, more than double the top three individuals. And yet the textbook concludes, again, that we are totally Enlightenment-based. Now, yesterday's founders, this is an original Noah Webster history textbook. He came to very much the same conclusion, explaining that it's the sincere desire of this writer that our citizens should early understand that the genuine source of correct Republican principles is the Bible, particularly the New Testament or the Christian religion. And I can't stress this enough, we don't necessarily want to indoctrinate our children into believing what our founders believe, but to report accurately what our founders did believe is important to scholarship. The fourth item is language deconstruction. We see Thomas Jefferson explaining the meaning of his declaration words in this textbook that says when Jefferson wrote that all men were equal, he really meant all citizens, women and blacks were not included. Now, this is using modern dictionary to define 18th century words. Often the term men was used to denote mankind, both male and female. Jefferson was also a tireless fighter against the evil institution of slavery, and you can still see on the Jefferson Memorial Wall his summary quotes from the Notes in Virginia regarding slavery, that, and can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we have removed their only firm basis, the conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are the gift of God, that they are not to be violated but with his wrath. Indeed, I tremble for my country when I realize that God is just and his justice cannot sleep forever. The problem is I see a complete censorship of the principles within the Declaration of Independence. And we have had testimony here during the debates for the history standards from Eric Martell of the Fordham Foundation, who explained on the Minnesota Department of Education website his testimony that it's a historical error to consider the Declaration a founding document that sets forth guiding principles for our nation. He explained the Declaration is only symbolically a founding document since it proclaimed independence. It has no legal status and establishes no rights or duties. I like to go back to our founders again, and this is an original explanation of the relationship between the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution by John Quincy Adams, where he explained clearly that it was the virtue which had been fused into the Constitution of the United States was none other than the principles which had first come forth from the Declaration of Independence, namely the unalienable rights of man. He concluded this was the platform on which the Constitution of the United States had been erected. Its virtues, its republican character, consisted in a conformity to the principles proclaimed in the Declaration of Independence. Finally, to give possibly a hint as to why this is happening. This is the National Curriculum Standards for Social Studies out of the National Council for the Social Studies. In that document, they explain that it's clear that the dominant social, economic, cultural, and scientific trends that have defined the Western world for five centuries is leading in new directions. Well, those principles which define Western civilization also defined America. And if they are moving in new directions, I think it's only fair that we balance that perspective with the ideas of our founding fathers by encouraging that teachers bring those into the classroom. They go on to say that meeting the need of this new society is the mission of social studies. And finally, in conclusion, I just want to give you a little taste of what the results of the assessments are coming out of the national level on some of the assessments. This happens to be just economic-related areas of responsibility that seventh or ninth graders have reported are now government's responsibility. For instance, 84.2% of all ninth graders now believe it's government's responsibility to set prices. 65.4% of ninth graders now believe it's government's responsibility to guarantee a job for anyone who wants one. And 63.5% of ninth graders now believe it's government's responsibility to redistribute wealth, or as they call it here, reduce differences in income and wealth among people. These are clearly not the foundations of democracy, and yet that is what this curriculum guide or assessment results show that ninth graders are now believing. The state constitution tells us that we, the people of the state of Minnesota, are grateful for God for both our civil and our religious liberty, and therefore it's important for us to understand what those founders believed to be true about liberty in both institutions. And I just want to conclude one final remark to say that that the purpose of this bill is to go the extra step beyond the basic and general framework of the recently passed social studies standards by ending that censorship and proactively ensuring that our children have full access to our founding principles of freedom. The bill does not advocate state sponsorship of religion nor seek to proselytize our children into any religion. America's education system has traditionally been about the free exchange of ideas. This bill in no way threatens that tradition, but rather guarantees it by eliminating the censorship of our history based on religious writings. It simply seeks to balance history with the only missing perspective from the table of ideas, that of our founding fathers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chapman. Representative Wilson, we have an amendment before us. Is this your amendment?
Yes, Representative. Yes, Mr. Chair. The A2 amendment? To get it in the order that I would like it?
Representative Wilson moves the A2 amendment as a courtesy to the author to get the bill in the manner he'd like to speak to it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to submit one final comment. A statement made by President Woodrow Wilson, who was also known as a historian, gave us, I think, a very key principle to guide our nation. He said, a nation that does not remember what it was yesterday does not know what it is today, nor what it is trying to do. We are doing a futile thing if we do not know where we've been or what we're about. And I think it's very important to understand that we need to teach these historical facts to assure that today's generation and future generations can know where we're going and what we're about. I'd appreciate members' support.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Members, are there any questions this time? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who'd like to speak to the bill? Seeing none, members.
Yes, I do have a
Representative
question.
Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, what I'm a little confused about on this is, you know, we feel like there is censorship in some pieces of our curriculum used, our historical social studies type curriculum used in the public school. Is that correct? Did I?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Dietrich, and members. That is correct.
Okay. Then this bill directs school districts, though, to be responsible for or take responsibility for what curriculum companies and writers are excluding from curriculum. I'm a little go ahead.
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dietrich, I'm not sure I understand the question. Do you want to?
Yeah, I can.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chapman.
Mr. Chair. Yes, actually, the bill, the amendment to the bill took out a directive that the districts must and made it more of an encouragement, and it more empowers teachers to bring in supplemental materials and encourage them to do that to balance what they're finding in their curriculum.
Okay.
Representative Dietrich.
Balance is a good quality. Is there any part of it that any part of that balance that makes sure it's factual? Like the presentation that you made, I have no doubt is factual, and I appreciate that. But is there any part of the wording of the bill that makes sure that whatever the supplemental wording that is brought in is really in context and part of an actual authentic document?
Mr. Chapman.
Yes, there is. That's one of the reasons the list is in there. It speaks to our original source material, and it speaks to these in particular to give examples of what this bill means. The Mayflower Compact, the Declaration of Independence, the original writings. And so it encourages, those things are available in many places, uncensored and unellipsed. So the idea is to bring those in, post them, and compare those original writings to what you are finding and see if there isn't a different conclusion you might come to based on what our founders believed to be true from the uncensored version of the works.
Representative Seibert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chapman, follow-up to Representative Dietrich's question, is there a reference for the schools to turn to help them out with coming up with this material?
Mr. Chapman.
Mr. Chair, there are a number of places that they can go, sir. David Barton's organization has a lot of historical reprints available on his website for downloading with the footnote to the original sources so you can verify that they're factual. There are places you can go on the Internet to find original versions of the Mayflower Compact. There are a number of places readily available. The problem we're finding is not necessarily in finding the material as much as it is in teachers being concerned that some of the religious writings might get them into trouble. And so this bill would help alleviate that concern. It would also encourage them to go and go ahead and be teaching good critical thinking skills by bringing those original sources in without fear of reprisal. There are organizations that don't want to see this pass. There are organizations that are concerned about bringing this kind of thing in because they don't want the religious writings known. And so this would help get past that.
Representative Dietrich.
Yes, so would you just help me in the bill to point out which language in the bill makes sure that it is actual documents, factual? So that's where I need to be reassured here.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dietrich, I appreciate your question. As Mr. Chapman noted, we've listed the founding documents, and I'm looking for some language here or a place that we could put something to further clarify if, in fact, we do need to do that. I'm looking for, if you look at the amendment on line 4,
Representative Olson.
The bill will read with the amendment on line 8, 7 and 8, school districts shall permit grade-level instruction to ensure students have the opportunity to read and study America's founding documents. Now, I'm reading that to mean we're talking about original source documents and not edited documents, by looking further into the bill, you'll see that that's why we state it in a number of ways. And then on the back page, or page 2, districts may not censor or restrain instruction in American or Minnesota state history or heritage based on religious references in documents referencing specific documents. So it's my intent, and maybe we should put original source documents. That's the one word. I mean, your question is good. I guess when we wrote it, we assumed that folks would know that we intend original source documents and the actual original writings.
Mr. Representative,
Representative Olson, I would feel a lot better about the bill if that were
okay.
Worded.
Representative Olson, do you have an oral amendment?
In time, I might find a couple places to put this, but one would be down on page 2, and I'll ask for advice from Representative Dietrich, because I really appreciate her insight on this. Districts may not censor or restrain instruction in American or Minnesota state history or heritage based on religious references in original source documents, writings, speeches, proclamations, or records. So we'll insert on page 2, line 11, after the word in, before the word documents, insert original source. I would move that amendment, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Dietrich.
Representative Dietrich.
No, I consider that an improvement.
Representative Olson moves that on page 2, line 11, after the word in, insert original source. Is there any discussion? Representative Thorne.
Mr. Chair and Representative Olson, I don't know if it makes a difference or not. I saw the same phrasing on page 1, line 18, on documents, writing, speeches, proclamations, records, the same phrasing. I don't know if it's necessary or not. It just might be another. You had said there may be other places. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's another place that could fit in with what we're doing here.
Mr. Chair, Representative
Olson.
Dorn, I would move it on page 1, line 18 as well, after the word the, before documents.
Mm-hmm.
And commit that any other places to put it, we'll look at that in education finance.
Mm-hmm. Representative Olson moves to amend his amendment on page 1, line 18, after the word the, insert original source. And Representative Olson, you'll incorporate that amendment to your amendment. So incorporated. Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Chair. How about maybe in line 10 also, after America's?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wardlow.
Representative Olson.
I don't know if it's necessary to have it everywhere, and with the word founding, I think it's, if members want it there, we'll put it there, but
I was just trying to help.
Yeah, and you are a Representative Wardlow. I'm trying to be careful of time.
Yeah, appreciated. Alright, we have the Olson Amendment in front of us. Any further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Dietrich.
Yes, I feel like Representative Olson and I are on a roll here, so I'm going to ask him for another, ask him if he would consider another friendly amendment, and that would be inserting the word tolerance in those lists of characteristics on the on page 1 of his bill on line 15.
Representative Dietrich, begging your pardon,
Representative
Chair, Representative Dietrich. Page 1, line 15.
Representative Dietrich.
Yes. Well, in your list of character qualities.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dietrich.
Olson.
This happened in our committee at local government the other day. We're, I mentioned time, and we're already on the next bill.
Oh, sorry.
I appreciate your zeal.
It's really conscientious of time to do.
Yeah.
All right.
Never mind.
Representative Peterson. All right. Seeing no further questions, then Representative Olson would renew his motion that House File 867, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to Committee on K-12 Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no.
No.
No. Motion prevails. The bill is passed. Representative Olson, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Next bill on the agenda for today, members, is House File 1661. Representative Olson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, again, and members. I will move House File 1661 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Committee.
Representative Olson moves that House File 1661 be recommended to pass and be referred to K-12 Finance. Representative Olson, to your bill.
Members, this bill also has been before us a couple times, and I'm bringing it up again to, we're finding more support in the Senate. Both bills have, the previous bill had a hearing in the Senate, and this one, I believe, is coming. Senator Wieger's carrying it for me in the Senate. And House File 1661 simply takes some existing law and amends it with character development or character education language. The only part of the bill that is new is on page 1, section 1, that creates some new language in law for a character development education. And, Mr. Chair, to get the bill in the order that I would like it, I would like to amend that language on page 1.
Representative Olson, is this written or oral amendment?
This is an oral amendment.
Representative Olson.
Page 1, line 15. After the word are, insert districts, after the word are, insert not limited to, but may use, not limited to, but may. And then on line 16, delete the words encouraged to. So the sentence will read as follows. Districts are not limited to, but may use programs such as Character First and Character Counts.
Mm-hmm. Do members have that amendment? Seeing no questions, Representative Olson moves the oral amendment as a courtesy to the author to get it in shape he'd like to speak to it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Olson.
Thank you, members. So you see the new language there in Section 1, Subdivision 1, that defines a character development education. In Subdivision 2, we have funding sources and instructions to first use the federal sources and then state or private sources. And then in Section 2, we take an existing program that's not currently funded but still in statute, and we amend the violence prevention education grants to include violence prevention and character development to make them grants available for character education as well. If you go to Section 3 of the bill, we establish or amend the current law with regard to model policy, and also amending the statute that involves admission or readmission plans for students that have been expelled to bring in character curriculum as a support mechanism to readmitting students after they've been expelled. And then also there's another policy with regard to student discipline. That's Section 5 in the bill. That's amending the statute that has some requirements with regard to prevention measures taken. We're including character into that provision of law. The Section 6 of the bill identifies a program focus. And lastly, the Safe Schools Levy, which is the reason why we really need to take it to Education Finance. We're allowing the Safe Schools Levy to be used for character programs. We're trying to find ways to support character education with current funding mechanisms, because we're finding that schools are really getting a benefit. Schools who go the extra, and that's what we have here in testimony today, we found some schools that have really gone the extra mile with regard to trying to address these kinds of curriculum issues, and come up with funds on their own, and they've gotten a great benefit, so we're trying to take existing programs and existing funding mechanisms and making them available for character. I have with me Jennifer Hilde, who is Miss Coon Rapids, who has made it part of her platform, Character Education, and I'll start with her. And we have a few other folks from different schools around the state that are using the character curriculum. And I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Hilde for testimony at this time.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Ms. Hilde, welcome to our committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jennifer Hilde, and for the past 3 years, I've been involved with character education through the Miss Twin Cities Scholarship Pageant and Miss Minnesota Scholarship Pageant. And I also work for the largest character education company in the state, Youth Frontiers. And this morning I want to touch on 3 points. First of all is, what is character education, what is character count, and discuss a little bit of the research on character education. Character education is designed to help people understand, care about, and act upon core ethical values. When discussing character with junior high students, we often talk about character is what you choose to do when nobody is looking. And as teenagers, they're often making decisions based on what feels right as opposed to what is right or wrong. So one of the curriculums listed in this bill is Character Count, and which is the most widely used character education program in the state. Over 3,500 schools use character counts. Members of the Character Counts Coalition include the NEA and the National PTA. In Minnesota, we have 3 coalition members and 79 certified trainers. Character Counts provides a framework for teachers to incorporate values in the classroom. It is not designed to be extra work on the teachers. Instead, it helps encourage students to base daily decisions on a foundation of good character values. But the main question here today is, does character education really work, or is it just a nice idea? I've witnessed firsthand the powerful impact that character can have in the classroom. But the most thorough and multifaceted assessment of character counts took place in South Dakota. It's a 5-year study based on 8,000 to 9,000 student responses each year. And what they found is that a few of the results are, students who said they had used physical force against someone who insulted them dropped by 33%. Cheating on exams dropped by 30%. And teasing because of race or ethnicity dropped by 45%. So this is just one of the research studies Character Counts has done. There are over 20 cited. And I'm here today because I've seen this work in classrooms, and Minnesota schools need state support on this level. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hilde. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And next I have with me Christy Breno from Maple Grove Junior High. She's a counselor there. And Janelle Dahlheimer from Osseo Junior High. And we'll turn it over to them, and have two more after that, Mr. Chair, if we could finish our testimony before we take questions.
Absolutely. Thank you, Representative Olson. Welcome to our committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Krista Breno, and I have with me Janelle Dahlheimer. We are with Osseo, or from Osseo School District. I work at Maple Grove Junior High, and she is at Osseo Junior High, and we are titled Character Educators in our building. Our district feels character education is very important, and character education came about in our district basically as a continuum from a federal drug prevention grant that we had received 5 years ago. The grant ran for 4 years, including alcohol, tobacco, and other drug prevention activities in our buildings. And what we found was that what we were doing with students and staff really was a lot of character development as well. So with remaining funds we had from a federal grant, we took that money and with some funds that were raised by our district foundation, started a character education component in our junior high buildings. Last year was our pilot year, and we're in our second year this year. And I'm here to say that their character education is very welcomed in our buildings, but there are some difficulties getting staff buy-in for it. As Ms. Hilde mentioned, the goal is to not have it be an extra, but rather as part of the day-to-day activities that students are dealing with, and promoting positive school climate in our buildings. In our second year, we've had much more staff buy-in. They're starting to see the benefits of character education in our buildings. We have student groups as well as staff groups pulling in parents and community members really to promote positive school climate. This bill being passed and the support for character education would be advantageous for us in continuing our ventures forward with character education. We do have funding for one more year, and because our district finds it important, we are continuing to look for funding sources, but the support from this bill would help support the idea that character education is needed and warranted in our buildings. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bernal. Ms. Stahlheimer.
Mr. Chair, she's just here supporting one of our buildings in our district.
And she's awful shy, isn't she? Thank you. Thank you for being here and your support. Representative Olson, to your final testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have with me Mike Mullen from as a business Principals for Success, and they're using Character First Education in their programs.
Mr. Mullen, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike Mullen. My business is Principals for Success, and what I am is a consultant trying to promote character in schools and communities and in businesses in the state of Minnesota. Briefly, I will just give you a overview of the Character First Education program. Character First Education is a character development curriculum designed to promote character in children pre-K through secondary education. I brought with me samples of Character First secondary and primary grades, and also some business information. It uses a total of 45 character qualities, and to answer Representative Dietrich's, tolerance is one of the character qualities that is represented here. Hopefully I will help to ease any concerns. It's used to increase student awareness of character and instill practical values. One of the guiding principles of Character First Education is character is more caught than taught. Children learn best by example, and they will pattern their lives after those they consider role models. And because of this, imperative that their role models display good character. One of the tools that Character First uses is very simple but not often used as a praising for character, praising students for promoting and showing and displaying positive character qualities. I have just briefly 36 character qualities that are representative, and I'll just go over them. I'll go over about 9 of them. Attentiveness, obedience, truthfulness, gratefulness, generosity, orderliness, forgiveness, sincerity, and virtue. And basically, I'm just stating the importance of character and how it's really needed in our society with the moral decline within schools that we all know about. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mullen. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the last testifiers, some of you may remember, we have with us Principal Shelley Wagner from Ricori Schools, and Brianna Trout, and Mitchell Jasky.
And welcome, Principal. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Shelley Wagner. I'm the principal at John Clark Elementary School in Rockville, which is part of the Ricori District. And we have been using Character First now for 4 years in our district. We felt that there was a, we felt that there was a decline in some of our student behavior, and we wanted to see what we could do to try to improve on that, and so that we would have a very positive environment for our students. And so we did adopt Character First Education, but we needed to take the funds from our building budget because the state wasn't recognizing this particular character building for our students yet, and there wasn't any money attached to it. So we got permission from the board to go ahead and try a program like this, and we found it was very, very successful with our students. We also found that not only with our students, it's a powerful character building, but also it does help some of our staff members as well. What we do in our school is we take our students and we put them into groups of, we're sixth graders, and these are two of our sixth grade students, where they have a family group. And that by that I mean we've got a student from kindergarten through grade six in their group, and the teacher teaches them the lesson for whichever trait that we're working on for that month. And then they are the ones that go back and teach their family group that particular trait. And then we work with that throughout the whole month. And so what I would like for you to do now is to hear a little bit from our two students, and they're going to talk about the two latest traits that we've worked on. Brianna's going to talk about compassion, and then Mitchell is going to talk about thriftiness.
So we will start with you, young man. If you could state your name for the record and give us your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Mitchell Jasky. I'm a sixth grade student at John Clark Elementary, and the recent one we have done was thriftiness. And that one shows kids to save more and spend less, and also not to confuse what they need with what they want. I learned as a family group leader how to be responsible and how to be a leader. And taking kids, we've done different programs, like fun activities, with these different character traits. And then one for thriftiness, we had a fake $50 budget, and we had newspapers, and you'd find something that a needy family would need to live off. So we had magazines that were had like grocery sales and stuff, and we couldn't go over $50, and our group did well with that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Jasky. Ms. Trout, if you would, please. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, I am Brianna Trout, and I'm a sixth grader at John Clark Elementary, and the character trait I'm going to be covering is compassion, and that was the one we had in February, and what we did for that is I have diabetes, and we have an annual walk at the Mall of America in January, and so our school raised money, and then in February sometime, we walked down to the local Lions Club Park to raise money. And really, compassion is investing whatever is necessary to heal the hurts of others. And as a family group leader, you learn to, you know, be a leader and help other kids out and everything like that. And it's kind of fun, too, to have all different kids in your group. And you get a little kid, and then you have some other ones, and it's just really fun. And I think it helps the kids a lot.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Ms. Trout. And to all of the testifiers, if you could just remain in case members of the committee do have questions, we'll call you back to the table at that time. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we will stand for questions. We saved the best for last.
Okay. Representative Thorne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in part a comment, I am interested in you know, learning more about the program and how it works. I would like to see the study that was referenced from South Dakota, just you know, how they're doing that. And I guess I could ask the principal and if the other witnesses, you know, could share also. Do you have a mechanism to kind of track over time how the program is impacting? Do you have any observations in terms of how well the instruction stays with kids and influences them over time, that sort of thing, or haven't you gone that far, or isn't it necessary? I can think of a number of reasons why, you know, someone might or might not. But what are you doing in that area,
Ms. Wagner?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dorn, what we do in that particular area is that we're at this point, we are just introducing the traits to the students so that they have an idea about what these are and what they're supposed to mean. There's two stories the teachers read to them in the month, and one is about how this trait is used in nature and then how it was used in history. And then we have big I will statements that we put up in the classrooms. And then the teachers also are trying to incorporate the trait somehow into their daily lessons as much as they can. And overall, I think that our behavior has increased so that we do have a more positive environment for our students. Like I said, we've done this for 4 years now, and so we're going to continue using this. But we're seeing a lot of good leadership qualities for our sixth graders. And because they're getting to know other students better in our school, you can see them making those connections with kids so that they're also helping to be our guiding force in a more positive environment.
Representative Long?
Thank you. And the other, I don't know if Ms. Hildy had a comment also, but I would like to see, you know, that study and how that worked.
Correct. Ms. Hildy.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair, Representative Dorn. The study was funded by the South Dakota 4-H Foundation, and let's see, I have names of the people, the researchers. It was associated with the South Dakota State University, and it is located on Character Count's website, but I can provide the full study in addition to other studies. Character Counts is connected with the Josephson Institute of Ethics, and they're located in California, so that's a good question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Wagner, just a follow-up to Representative Thorne's question. Do you track student behavior electronically?
Not at this time.
All right.
I just keep just a written log right. for myself.
Right. To Representative Thorne, I know that in the school that I work in, as part of our, I believe it's our TSIS, student management program, all discipline referrals are entered into that. And I know that if we were to, at our school, incorporate this program, we would then have a before and after snapshot. So, yeah, I think that's a good thing, you know, to look at if the school district does go down this route. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think I may have asked Ms. Wagner this question the last time, but you did reference that you had to take the funds out of your school budget to start the program. And I guess I've got two parts to the question. How much did it cost you at your school site to start the program, and what are the continuing costs? That seemed to be a key part of your testimony. I'm a retired teacher, and we started programs periodically in the schools I taught in, and there wasn't necessarily a special appropriation attached to that. We would take it out of the various resources that we had at our site, and so I'm interested in the cost factor and why you feel that was an important part of your testimony here today.
Ms. Wagner.
Mr. Chair and also Representative, this particular binder we would buy for one for each of our classroom teachers, and then I would buy a couple extra ones of these for some of our other support staff within the building. And each one of those binders, when we first started, was about $40, but now it has increased. I think it's up to like $60 a piece. There's also some support materials that go with that, some posters and stuff that we have for our classrooms, and then there's always the cost of some of the activities that we are going to do. It depends upon what they may be. There's also a cost factor there as well. So,
Representative Thorne.
So, Mr. Chairman, I happen to be one that wants more money for the schools, but this doesn't exactly sound like a budget buster in terms of the ability of a school site if they choose to start the program, and that would be about $60 per teacher. I mean, we purchase periodically, almost on a yearly basis, supplies and materials for teaching without a special appropriation. So I guess I'm going back to the why. I mean, is it a particular burden in your school to get the funding to start the program? Did you get any central district funding to help with it? I'm just interested in that budgetary aspect of it.
Ms. Whiteman.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I have a school of about 167 children, so my allocations from the district are very low because of the number of students that I have. And so, therefore, we need to look at the whole picture and see what we have to take out, what we need first, like our classroom supplies, books, those kinds of things. And those are the things that have to come out first before any of the extra things that we have.
And Mr. Chair, just a final question. And how many? Forget to turn this off. How many teachers do you have in the building?
Ms. Wagner.
Mr. Chairman and also Representative, we have about 12 teachers in our building.
Okay, thank you.
Right.
The phone ringing was bipartisan. There was only one.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Krista Brenno here has some additional response to Representative Dorn's question on tracking.
Thank you. Ms. Brenno.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dorn, at the junior high level, this is our second pilot year, as I had mentioned, and the question was, are we tracking behaviors and numbers that are affecting what we're doing in our buildings? And the answer to that at the junior high in our district is yes. We also are affiliated with TSIS, and what we have done is we've done a pre and a post survey in both years, as well as we have a paid evaluator for our programs to determine if character ed is effective and if it warrants the money that's being spent for it. So this being our second pilot year, we definitely have had buildings where behavior referrals have gone down, violence occurrences have gone down, and in some of our buildings we've actually seen a rise in that number, and we attribute some of that as we continue to evaluate the fact that more students are reporting behaviors, staff are reporting behaviors, and so we do believe that we may see some increases in those numbers before we see decreases, but it is a big part of our program to continue evaluating to make sure that the money spent is a positive correlation. I wanted to address also the idea of funding at the junior high level. Some of the materials, yeah, they are not necessarily expensive. You can get inexpensive curriculums. However, one of the difficulties we've dealt with is staff not having the time to take it on. Our counselors have about a 600-to-1 ratio in our junior high buildings and just do not have the time to take on the planning and the extra pieces that go with character education. That kind of filters into why staff have been not so supportive, because we put more and more on teachers continuously. So a big chunk of the funding that happens in our district is for a position such as myself and Ms. Dahlheimer to be in the buildings on a half-time level to coordinate this program and make sure that it's effective and plan activities for the staff, for the students. That's what we do as our whole job, and so it's not put on a teacher or a counselor. So that's where the huge power of funding comes from, or the need for funding in our buildings. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, seeing no further questions, Representative Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These two bills together, back-to-back, kind of leave me with an uncomfortable feeling. Like, I like most of what they have to say and the priorities that they have. I'm wondering why they even need to be here, because all of this can already be done in the schools. But I've also got this uncomfortable feeling that there's a stalking horse in here somewhere inserting religious instruction into the schools or getting God back into the classroom. I know there were many references in the bill just before this to instances in which God was somehow excised, or religious references were excised out of founding documents. I also have this uncomfortable feeling like we're trying to bring the 1950s back. And I looked at the pamphlets that were passed around, and there was instruction in there how to properly tie a tie. It's like when we found a children's book at a garage sale that was written in the 1950s, and it was both helpful and disconcerting at the same time. I don't know how to describe this feeling of unease about this. I noticed in one of these booklets the Ten Commandments of Good Sportsmanship were listed. One of the witnesses for this bill referenced the moral decline in our schools that we all know about. So I've got this uneasy feeling about all of this, and frankly wondering why this bill even needs to be coming forward if the schools, if they wish to, some already are doing this. I question why words aren't in subdivision one of this bill that talk about specifically identify tolerance, although tolerance is listed as one of the courses in the pamphlets that were sent around. I don't see any reference to independence or independent thinking or critical thought or challenging authority where it might be appropriate. Certainly not in the list that's in the subdivision one of the bill in front of us. And I also believe that most of what's in here ought to be taught in our families and ought to be taught in our religious institutions. And I'm just nervous about what this means for our public schools. Not to mention the concern about, you know, just financial aspects of funding our schools. So the other piece that I have some concern about is just making any specific reference to programs in statute here that are particularly no longer encouraged, according to Representative Olson's amendment, but the districts are not limited to but may use programs such as. I mean, to me, that is a completely, frankly, worthless component of statute. There is nothing about the law that says that they can't use these things. Just saying a district may use some curriculum materials that are out there seems to me, if it's not somehow prohibited by constitution or case law, then they can use it. If it is currently prohibited by constitution or case law, I want to know about that before I put a provision in statute that says they may be used in schools. On the other hand, all of the qualities that are listed here I find beneficial and helpful and think every kid should know. So I've got this great sense of unease and support for the bill in front of us, and I wanted to register that for the record. Frankly, I'm distraught to some degree that we even are considering this stuff today. On the other hand, I understand completely why Representative Olson is bringing this forward, concerned about the conduct of certain kids in our schools. So I don't know if anyone else has the same sense of discomfort on this committee that I do about this, but I wanted at least to the record to reflect that level of discomfort by at least one member.
And Representative Watts, let the chair note that you are a unique individual, and that's why we appreciate you. Representative Dietrich.
Uniqueness. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to just, I think that my comments are a little bit related to Representative Watts, but I, because, first of all, I would like to make the statement. I would hate for anybody here to think or presume or try to insinuate that schools, our public schools, do not use or teach character development right now. In fact, there are some people who criticize our schools because they are constantly teaching character development, that they never even get, that they, some extremists would say, they don't get to the curriculum as often and as much as that they would like because they're always working on student behavior. So I would just like to make that very clear. I don't think there's anybody here that would say that our schools don't address character development. But with that being said, in the school district that I am most familiar with, obviously, we have had character curriculum in place for quite some time, I think for almost 10 years. And it is a very... it is the positive side to it is it does add some structure. It just gives some structure for teachers to hang on to it adds some structure to the whole school climate, and instead of that constant, and some people could actually construe it as nitpicking constantly on character behavior. But as I on another thought where I do some of the characteristics listed here in this bill do remind me of a little bit let's just say older fashioned, and I do think that we have some very up to date 21st century type concerns in our schools right now that do deal with character development, and the ones that I am most familiar with are behaviors like bullying, violence in our schools, and intolerance. And so I would feel much better about the bill if we had just a little bit more balance in the list of characteristics that are listed here that reflected some of the more current issues that we're dealing with. And I mentioned it earlier at the wrong time, so I will now mention it now, I think at the correct time. I would very much appreciate if we would add two other characteristics, and one would be tolerance, and the other one would be some sort of peacemaking or conflict resolution. I think those are things that we can all agree on that are a part of character development and we need to have up front. But I think it just sends a more sincere message that we are right now trying to address real issues that are that we do find as challenges in our public schools right now.
Representative Dietrich, would you like to move a formal amendment?
Yes.
Could you please state your formal amendment?
I would like to amend House File 1661 to include the words tolerance and peacemaking to the list of characteristics on line 15.
Representative Dietrich moves to amend on page 1, line 15, after the word forgiveness, insert tolerance, comma, peacemaking. Is that correct, Representative Dietrich?
Yes.
Representative Olson, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dietrich and members, that's just fine.
All right. Representative Heidgerken, to the amendment.
Thank you, yes. And looking at that, I'm looking at your definition of Representative Olson that you have here, I think is already good.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, going back to what Representative Lassett stated before, sometimes we read too much into it. And I think you have, I mean, you look at self-discipline, that is already tolerance. When I taught Emerson and Thoreau in literature, they taught self-discipline as well. And yet they were perhaps the leader among the transcendental thought. But I think that we add too much in there. We're really watering it down as well. The intent is I like the intent of it. It's good to look at going back to the basics to some degree. That's what we have history for. We learn from our past mistakes and whatnot all. And I really see no need at all for the words tolerance, peacemaking. I think it's pretty much forgiveness. Everything else is in here. But anyway, that's just my thoughts on it. I think we're reading too much into it.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm certainly not. All I want to do is defer to the committee. I don't have a problem with the words. I was more than happy. I discussed it with folks here after. I was glad you brought it up with the last bill. I have no problem with the word tolerance. The word peacemaking is definitely a quality, but a lot of these qualities here really are part of that and support that. But I will defer to the committee members, and I'm okay with it, but I'll definitely defer to the committee members.
Any further comment? Representative Wax.
Mr. Chairman, not to engage too far in this, but sometimes it is healthy to try to read too much into what appears on the surface to be one thing. We heard a presentation quoting Thomas Jefferson condemning slavery, but we didn't hear in the presentation that Thomas Jefferson owned slaves at the same time and, in fact, consorted with those slaves. So, it's worth looking below the surface to understand all the facts that are involved. I'll note that in one of the materials that went around here, although this does not appear to have any specific explicit religious content, that one of the board members of one of the organizations here is a reverend connected with the God, or founder of the God Squad. So, sometimes there are levels below what appears to be on the surface, and it's worth asking the questions to try to ascertain some of those.
Thank you. For the amendment, Representative Peterson.
I'm sorry, mine is not on the amendment.
All right. To the amendment, Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like the idea that we want to clarify things, but I think the words that were chosen here on the page that are, as I read them, are words that I think are not loaded with maybe some other value structure. I think the word tolerance is a loaded word. I think it implies accepting other people's views as being equal, which may or may not be the case. And what I would suggest is if we're going to go down the road of starting to make more lists on here, that we kind of follow the lead of what Representative Olson has done to make sure we use words that aren't loaded. And I would suggest rather than tolerance, we put in a phrase, respect for others.
We have respect for authority.
Well, we have respect for authority, but we have respect for others' points of view as well. But tolerance implies that there's an equalness. And quite frankly, I think we all sometimes believe that our position is right. I will respect somebody else's, but we want the ability to be able to kind of own our turf as well as what we think is right. And that's a concern I have. If we're going to start just on the fly laundry listing good qualities here, I think we get down a road that's a little bit dangerous. I think he's got, but not limited to, is a pretty good introduction to this list that makes sure that school districts and others have the ability to be able to add to this as they see fit. So I guess that's my word. I think we should caution, or go down a road of caution if we're going to start just laundry listing more good qualities, because we could go on that road for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Final word to your amendment, Representative Dietrich.
Yes, I've heard two suggestions as substitutions for the words that I would add, and I am comfortable with those, so I will amend my amendment, and that would be to change peacemaking to conflict resolution, and tolerance to respect for others. I move that.
Does staff have that oral amendment to the amendment? Then Representative Dietrich will incorporate that into her amendment. Seeing no further questions, we're prepared to vote. All those in favor signify by Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're moving. I actually really agree with the movement on respect for others, because it's more definitive. But the conflict resolution is really an outcome that's really what we're after. And the context here, I don't think is where we should really have that. It is the goal. It's what we really want. And, Mr. Chair, if I could, Ms. Brenno would like to respond to this a little bit, too, from their experience.
Ms. Brenno.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I just wanted to add as well that in the district that I'm in, each of our buildings has very different needs. And we don't specifically use character first. We use a combination of Project Wisdom and Changing Lives. There are numerous character ed. We don't even call ours a curriculum. We call it materials that we use to incorporate into our building and into the day-to-day functions. But I would bet Ms. Wagner would agree that depending on the building that you're in, we don't necessarily use all of these specific traits. There are many ways that you can define these different traits, and I think even within our four junior high buildings, we've had our principal work with our principals to look at what the behaviors in those particular buildings are that we want to work on. So I appreciate the breaking down the traits. I think it is important, but just to note that the ones that are listed here, they're encompassing many different curriculums. I mean, that specific, be specific to each building that are listed there.
Representative Dietrich, to the concern that this is a list of character qualities and yet conflict resolution may not be a character quality.
I would agree with that. Point well taken. And so I would move back to peacemaking.
All right.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
We're making sausage. Representative Dietrich moves to amend her amendment by deleting conflict resolution and inserting peacemaking. Representative Carlson will stop me if I start getting to bad form here, all right? But I believe you can incorporate that into your amendment. Representative Olson.
We're learning tolerance here.
We're practicing. Representative Olson.
Thank you, members. We'll leave it for the committee to vote, and I appreciate the good discussion. It was a long, a lot of work to come up with this, and I appreciate the added work. Thanks.
To the Dietrich Amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
No. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. All right. Representative, I have a list here, Representative Watts, and you can be on the list. Representative Nornes.
No.
Mr. Chair, I just had a quick comment. Representative Latz made a reference to the 50s, and it just... I had to respond. It wasn't all bad, and I guess I consider myself lucky to grow up during that time.
Representative Sikora.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I just wanted to address a couple comments more to Representative Latz, but kind of for everybody. You know, you were concerned because we don't talk about critical thinking and questioning of adults and those kinds of qualities. I think those are all in our standards for our, you know, the things that we expect the students to learn. That's all a part of that. This is something that I think the character development piece is kind of how you set up your classroom, kind of your expectations for behavior within your classroom. And, you know, somebody mentioned that many teachers spend an awful lot of their time on behavior. The goal of something like this is to get past having to spend your time on behavior. What you want to do is get the students to understand your expectations. And then, really, you get past that, usually in the first few days of the year. And then you kind of have a standard for the rest of the year, and you don't have to spend a lot of your time disciplining students and working on behavior issues. So that's why I think the character development, especially early in the year, can have such an effect on what happens. For instance, there will not be as much bullying. There will be more respect shown to others. The students will get along better. There will be more respect for authority. And now, I just wanted to assure you that those other pieces, though, are in the learning standards that we have developed.
Thank you. Representative Heidgerken. All right. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask, maybe, I'm not sure which of you can answer this, but can you access the dollars for... out of these, what is it, which fund are you trying to access? Safe Schools Fund?
Safe Schools.
Is that the dollars that you want to access for this program?
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, the Safe Schools Levy, is that what you're...
Is that the one you're trying to access?
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, members, that is correct. And I understand there's some proposed changes to that, and that's why I've asked to go to Ed Finance to make sure that we come up with something. Even without the funding, as I noted in my presentation, the violence prevention grants, is currently no money there, but the feds send money down once in a while. The policy remains in law. Periodically, we put state dollars into it. So when those dollars are there, this is making the connection, and then the money will be there. So the policy is there. In fact, not meaning to get off on a tangent, but Representative Latz has expressed unease with this is really, in a very real way, the reason we need the bill, because people do feel uneasy with this, but as long as we're saying, you know, this is needed, you decide what it is. You decide, as they did in Maple Grove, and as they did in Ricori, they decided what they wanted. Each chose different programs, each chose different values, and they fit their own needs. So this is intended to just say, you know, we encourage you to meet these needs. You decide what those needs are and how you're going to meet them, but don't worry about the uneasiness, because you shouldn't. We need to meet these needs. We need these values. If you go back to the 50s and look to today, I think there's good evidence to show that, in a way, we've thrown the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, and removed so many things from school. I know it occurred in my generation of public schools in the 60s, and that's kind of the history of why I brought this forward. As far as the funding issues, Representative Peterson, we're just identifying some existing funding mechanisms that this fits with and would be a good additional policy benefit to those funding mechanisms.
Mm-hmm. Representative Peterson.
Would you be able to access those funds without this legislation? And also, you named two specific programs, and I know, you know, having observed some of these programs in schools, that they can be effective. So, but there probably are other character programs, and as you said, some of the curriculums already contain a lot of the character development. would other programs be able to access the Safe School funds under your legislation, and could you do this without the legislation? Could you access these funds without the legislation, or do you need this in order to be able to put dollars into the program?
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, and members, my understanding is we need this to access these programs for the funding, and the reason why we have as much definition as we do to assure that other programs do fit that need. That's why we have the but not limited to language in a couple places in the bill.
Representative Peterson, that was part of the initial amendment that Representative Olson brought forward, was to add on line 15 after the word R. Mm-hmm. Right. Representative Storm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I did appreciate Representative Dietrich's comment that schools certainly, are active in this area. I think we all, who work in schools are aware of that. My interest in part is, my wife does quite a bit of work in this area, but I think one of the issues that they need to look at that I think the bill addresses is that it does seem to work better if you get everybody on board and you've got some kind of consistency in across the building or cross curriculum kinds of approaches to have some of these traits last longer. Representative Norris, I appreciate your comment on the 50s. I've read about the 50s in history books. I'm in denial. The question still is kind of sticking is, I think it was Ms. Brennell? Reference that you use parts of other programs that wouldn't be referenced in statute, and I do get a little uneasy, not that we're referencing some, but I wouldn't want people to not look at others or realize that there are others, and I'm wondering if we would be better off remaining silent on any program and just include that the commissioner could certainly either develop or disseminate information about programs because I'd want it to be equal for all. It might be that the program, I don't know either, I like what I saw. It's not anything, about any particular program, but I wonder if we would be better off being silent and just saying that, there are a bunch there, the commissioner knows about them, and if school districts want the information, perhaps they already know that, but just any reaction to that. Probably Representative Olson, any reaction going a different route rather than naming, just saying would be made available or could be available.
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dorn, I thank you for raising that. That's one of the reasons I did change the language in the amendment that the chair just referenced. The character person character counts are the two most comprehensive and substantive programs that I've seen. They're also the only two programs I've seen mentioned in any law around the country, and there's a number of states who pass laws. They're both used internationally, and I just thought, I after studying them and subscribing to the curriculum myself, I would get, I've collected this by getting periodicals every month for a number of years now, and I just felt by establishing a really comprehensive example, it assures that all the other programs can be supported. It's also, I've taken these three-ring binders to a variety of teachers, and they look at how substantive it is, and they have expressed to me they're really afraid to use it because it is so substantive. The unease that Representative Latz mentioned is what I often get from teachers and being afraid because it's bringing in values. I say, well, I'm not dictating the values. You choose them. If you don't agree with any of this, then don't use it. And so the idea is just to have a very comprehensive, there's 44 qualities with character first. I'm not aware of any other program that has that many qualities all established and worked out. So having that comprehensive example, I feel is really good to create an umbrella to assure that all the others can be agreed to. And again, that's why I changed the language to be even more permissive with regard to the use of those programs, with an emphasis right in the beginning of the sentence of, but not limited to.
To this point,
your concern.
To this point, Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, you're talking about teachers being afraid. If I showed this to my wife, she teaches third grade, she would say, well, finally someone's listening to me. Somebody's been watching my classroom. She is not afraid of this, and this is how she teaches right now.
Mm-hmm. Very good. To this point, Representative Erickson.
Yes, thank you, Chair Biskins. And Representative Olson, I think you've been very diplomatic here in this bill. The verb is encourages, and then you have the addition of not limited to, but may. I recall as a teacher, I looked for suggestions. I may not want it to have accepted that suggestion, but it gave me a place from which to start to determine whether or not this was something that would be valuable in my classroom. And so I thank you for your diplomacy, because you really have, approached this legislation from trying to offer us some suggestions and yet not dictate to our districts. Thank you.
Representative Flats.
I just want to note that I know some people in their 50s, if that's enough.
Thank you. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a response to Representative Latt's initial statements, I guess some of the things that I see in terms of where we've come from in the 1950s is STDs in schools on the rise. I think somewhere I saw it was about 700%. How many school shootings did we have in 1950s, 1960s? We've got some problems, and I think that this is part of the solution to addressing some of those behavioral issues that really come to the core of the issue, which is character. And it is about character, because character determines behavior. And so I think this is a great step in the right direction, that our schools are responsible to teach our kids civic duties, and character is a huge part of that. So I'm very encouraged by this legislation.
Thank you. Last comment goes to Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. First of all, some of us can talk about going up in the 40s. and a little bit in the 50s. But that also would indicate that I perhaps carry a Medicare card now. That wasn't the reason I wanted to be recognized. Mr. Chairman, I'm pretty hard-pressed going back to the discussion we had earlier, and I was tracking apparently the same way a couple of people were about referencing specific programs. I'm pretty hard-pressed to think of many instances or any really where we reference even encouraging specific programs in statute. I would think if you read subdivision 1, and if that sentence were not there, it wouldn't do violence. You're talking about the commissioner shall provide assistance, so I assume the curriculum people in the department, if assistance were requested, that would probably reference these programs and maybe some others that we're not aware of. But I think that's a little more direction than what we typically give in state law. So, Mr. Chairman, what I would like to do is make a small oral amendment that we strike, beginning on line 15, that sentence, then, districts are encouraged but not limited to, with that amendment, through line 16 and down through character counts on line 17. And I really don't think that does violence, but it does kind of respect what we've historically done relative to not generally mentioning a specific program, especially one, as I understand it, that's in the marketplace and actually sold. We're encouraging an expenditure in a certain given direction as well. So I would move that amendment.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know we're running out of our time here. Appreciate
Representative Olson, we have this evening.
Okay.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, and Representative Carlson, I've responded to this somewhat, and I'll just reiterate briefly the importance of the umbrella. I do believe there's a time and place for everything. That it's just a struggle to define when that is. And after studying this for a long time, and seeing that other states have warranted this in their laws as well, because I believe this is the concern you raise is one that's common in all bodies that make laws. I stated in my presentation in the beginning that just like with my own personal business, or maybe I've stated this many times to people, I thought I said it, but I'll say it now. that when I sell a log house, for example, I don't sell a log house to somebody that doesn't want a log house, because it's like trying to sell somebody a blue house if they want a green house. If they don't want a log house, I don't sell it. I don't even try. I found the same thing to be true with character education. When I talked to Mr. Mullen and others, and when we looked for people to testify, I asked them. I said, do you have concerns with your program that you're using not being listed? And I found absolutely not. In fact, what we really need in here, one quality really needed in here, is humility. Because there's a real sense of that amongst people who work with this, with these programs, and that is that, you know, folks back home are going to choose their own values. The main reason why these two programs are mentioned is they are the two most comprehensive and really provide a good umbrella of an example for all the programs. And that, to me, warrants the time and place for this to be done. And I think it has merit. The committee rules, and I will submit to the committee, but I would appreciate members to not supporting the motion.
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, I only point out that those still could be informally recommended. My concern is that you're giving this kind of specific direction in a statute. And even though it's encouraging, we had testimony that the booklets that were on the counter there are something like $60 each, and you start looking at that across the state of Minnesota, and you're pushing, even though it's only giving direction, into a specific program, some pretty major expenditures when you consider all the school districts and teachers across the state, and I'm just not sure that that's appropriate to encourage an expenditure in a given direction like that. I think we're better off being silent and letting those decisions be made locally in consultation, as you do say, with Section 1 with the Department of Education in terms of what curriculum materials may be available. I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman. I think I've made my point.
Yeah. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Carlson, while you're making your point, I realize by your comments that you may not have caught my initial amendment, because we are not encouraging the use of these programs. My amendment would cause that sentence to read as follows. Districts are not limited to, but may use, programs such as Character First and Character Count. So they're just an example. They aren't even encouraged to. They're simply just an example. The word encouraged on line, page 1, line 11, remains with regard to character education in general, but with regard to those two examples, they're just simply in the context of may use these, and that's how I get back to my point that they are simply examples to create this umbrella picture of all these programs underneath this example would work, because they're the most comprehensive ones.
And Mr. Chairman, I think in my comments I referenced the amendment I may have used in my discussion of the word encourage, but my comments stand as they were.
Thank you. To the Carlson Amendment, seeing no further questions, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No. No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Members, seeing no further questions to the bill, Representative Olson renews his motion that House Bill 1661 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on K-12 Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails. The bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, members.
The last bill, members, on our agenda is House File 1273. Representative Demmer.
Thank you.
Representative Demmer, I will move that House File 1273 be back before the committee. Members, there is an amendment being passed out. It is the A2 amendment. And I will wait until it gets to each of you. Well, nah, how about if we do this? Representative Demmer, the A2 amendment, is that your amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it is.
Thank you. Representative Demmer moves the A2 amendment, and then Representative Demmer, would you speak to the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A2 amendment is the result of discussion, lots of discussion, communications, both with Ms. Alswager with Education Minnesota as well as with other members, both sides of the aisle. What this amendment does is outline some of the issues or address some of the issues we talked about in our last meeting. Specifically, we did a couple of things. We wanted to make sure that districts are allowed to start negotiating during the year that the calendar, or during the calendar year that the contract will expire. They can start negotiating actually during the year starting in March 1st. So we have language basically stating that there's no negotiations until school is done in the spring in the even number years, and in the odd number years would be the prohibition against negotiating would be ending on March 1st. Again, so allows districts and representatives of the union to go ahead and start negotiating in March 1st of that contract year. The second thing we did is and this is a bit problematic because what we're trying to do is make sure that districts and teachers can continue to discuss things. The idea is to get the hardcore negotiating of benefits and wages and that sort of thing away from the school year. Well, there was really no clean way to say that. The language we did to try to accomplish that is lines 7 through 9 in the amendment, which says the paragraph does not prohibit the school board and exclusive representatives from discussing matters of mutual interest during the school year. And the spirit of the bill hopefully will prevent people from taking liberty with that as we go forward. The last and probably most important areas we did after much discussion with many members, it was and I agreed with this wholeheartedly, if we can make this work, is to put an incentive in place to encourage districts and teachers to get done on a timely basis. And what we did is we inserted a $25 per student or per adjusted pupil units if the district and the teachers are done by the specified deadline, which is 90 days after the governor signs the appropriation, the K-12 appropriation bill, or the start of school, whichever is later. Right. So, Mr. Chair and members, that is that's the amendment that I offer for the bill to try to move, hopefully, in the direction we can go to get this enacted.
All right. Ms. Alswager, to the amendment.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the first time I've seen the amendment. We have talked about some of the concepts of it. So I will first start out with what we agree upon. I must say that this doesn't exactly follow the procedures of, if you ever read the book, Getting to Yes. And so that we really don't, I won't say that we have an agreement here. I think that's very clear. And from what Representative Abel and Representative Mindy Greiling had said about wanting to come and put these two together, I have to tell you that that's not what we have here today. But there are some things that we do agree on. So I'm going to start with those. We had talked about possibly starting negotiations earlier on line 6. That clearly states that that we would be able to start bargaining March 1st. That seems to make some sense. And then lines 10 through 18, that appears to be the language that we had talked about that would be the $25 incentive. I believe we can agree to that. Lines 7 through 9, where the exclusive rep and the school board could discuss, basically it says that they could discuss matters of mutual interest during the school year. What is that? I mean, is that bargaining? or is it not bargaining? I assume it's bargaining. So I'm not really, maybe Representative Demmer can explain a little bit more. Is there really a prohibition on bargaining or not in this bill? Then the last thing, which is the most important issue, is lines 2 through 4, 90 days. 90 days would take you to probably about September 1st if the governor were to just sign it June 1st, the bill June 1st. And he does say whichever is later. I want to give you some reality. The Bureau of Mediation Services has approximately 12 mediators. If a district and the teachers' union decide that they want to go to mediation, which is very common, and you know, if they're having some trouble and they don't want to get rid of some of that conflict, they go to the BMS, they get a mediator to help them. I don't think it's physically possible for the mediators to help. Right now there's 341 school districts, and if even a third of them went to mediation, I don't think it's possible for them to fit everybody in the schedule to get done. That's why any kind of prohibition against bargaining is very difficult, because if you need a third party, you have to work with their calendars as well. So our recommendation to Representative Demmer is, if you want an earlier date, go to September 15th, December 15th. So that's a possibility. The other thing that I would say is that once bargaining starts in the summer, and then if you have to stop when school starts, you end up having this momentum and then it stops. And I would actually say that if you aren't able to bargain, the discussion about bargaining is still going to take place among the teachers, among the school board members, to a point where you may dig your heels in and things start to, you know, not go so well, and then you get this anticipation that things are going to go well. Maybe they don't. 3 months is not much time to bargain, but maybe Representative Demmer could clarify lines 7 through 9. That might be helpful.
Representative Demmer.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have to pause for a moment here to give some thanks and some credit to Ms. Larson, who got this language yesterday. We thought maybe this bill would be coming later, so she's put these together very quickly, and I appreciate that. The intent of lines 7 through 9 is to not prohibit teachers and school districts from talking. For example, letters of memorandums of understanding, meet and confer type of situations. If they're working on something, I know back when I was on the board, we had some discussions, I think, about 403Bs, and we made a decision to settle our contract, and then we would discuss in the coming year, have some work groups get together and talk about that concept. That's the sort of thing we're trying to get to here, to allow those sort of things to happen. We're open to any kind of wordsmithing we can do, and you know, if we can get this bill passed out of this committee and go to finance, I'm very open to working on this and any other areas to get that done. But the intent is to keep the bulk of negotiations and keep the climate of the school free of the kind of climate and atmosphere that can deteriorate during contract negotiations. That's the impetus of the bill, if you will, or what we're trying to get accomplished here. So those lines are intended to not prevent any kind of conversation, but just to leave that door open for those sorts of meet and confer or memorandums of understanding type of things.
Representative Vapor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We talked about this earlier. Wasn't there some discussion about October 15th as a date that was going to be in here?
Representative Demmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abel, yes, there was. Actually, we had a lower incentive for a later date.
But I mean, I don't.
And we raised the incentive to an earlier date.
I don't see October 15th as the date when it stops. Maybe I misread the amendment. I thought there was going to be a bonus for getting done before school, and then a time of neutrality up to October 15th, and then the bargaining stops. I thought that's what we talked about this morning, that you were going to bring forward today. Did I misunderstand, or is that what it says already?
Representative Demmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, no, you didn't misunderstand. That was one of the things we talked about. There was about four different things that were discussed. A couple were go to a later deadline with a lower incentive, if you will. There was also a talk of a two-tiered incentive. There was discussion about just the earlier hire incentive, and I just like to take the earlier hire one open to an adjustment if you want to look at. That is one of the things we talked about. There's no question, and there's many things in the mix, obviously. And I just had to, in the interest of getting Ms. Larson the information, I had to pick one and go forward. So, you know, if you want to expound on that a bit, Representative Abler, and look at some sort of amendment, that'd be open to something.
Mr. Chair, it's General 5, so I'm not sure how much expounding we have time to do. Are we going to come back tonight and work on this, or what's... I think you have two choices. If you think that they can keep working and talk about this on the way to finance, we could make a motion without recommendation and move them along, or you can come back tonight and we can hammer out another tentative thing and still make the same motion tonight, probably, so it's probably the Chair's decision or the body's decision. I like the first idea, but if you can...
Okay. Representative Wardlow.
I think, Mr. Chair, this amendment, the teacher in me is coming out, you know, 31 years worth. I'm really getting uncomfortable with this. Ms. Allswager, to what extent do you think cooperation will occur and have some meaningful... things happen between now and education finance.
Ms. Allswager.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Wardlow, the issue that I think is the biggest conflict between the work that we're doing together is the time. And, you know, our issue is the reality of getting it done. And if you want to use mediators, which I think this body would encourage people who are having difficulty to go to mediators, you're either going to have to significantly increase the staff at BMS, which financially I don't think you're going to want to do, or you're going to say that you can't get it done through mediation. And, you know, moving it to December 15th brings it up a little bit. And still, I think we think that it could still get done. You might want to talk to BMS and see what the possibility is. I know that when this issue was up last year or 2 years ago, they were here following the bill and that they had some concerns, but I'm not going to speak for them here today. And you know, it depends on whether Representative Demmer feels that he can move as well.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my only comment, you know, starting negotiations on March 1st and going to December 15th is 9 months. We do an entire state budget in, what, 4 or 5 months? And I, with all due respect, I really believe that in the spirit of getting things done, I don't think it's unreasonable to have this done before school starts. I found it very interesting to have this conversation and this topic right after talking about character development and all the things we talked about where we're teaching kids about patience, understanding, cooperation, mutual respect, and getting along. And we talked about climate in a school district and what we're trying to foster with kids with what we just passed with Representative Olson's bill. And now we're talking about the exact same thing. That is the purpose of this bill. It's about climate in the school, and I'm not talking about HVAC here. So, Mr. Chair, I guess I really feel that 6 months is an appropriate period of time to negotiate, and I'd like to see it go that way. I'm warm to Representative Abler's idea of maybe having an incentive, you know, at that date, maybe taking off the incentive and having a no-negotiation date at October 15th or later. If the committee's more comfortable with that, I'm open to that sort of thing.
All right.
But I really think that's an appropriate period of time.
Excuse me. Mr. Chair?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you. I'm very concerned about the points Ms. Allswager has brought forward about the possible impact of this on the Bureau of Mediation Services.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I'd like to move at this time that we refer this bill without recommendation to the Jobs Committee.
Mm-hmm. Representative Dabney moves to, let's see, that is the higher motion, so we'll have to vote on that one first at that time, right? But that eventually would put this bill to bed for this year, right? That would be the end result of that motion, right? Without any time to make committee deadlines, right? To the motion, right? Do we have any Representative Demmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, you know, I think, you know, to have someone come at the next committee or whatever to testify for mediation services on how this might work, I think it would be very appropriate to send it to a full number, another committee just to hear the testimony of somebody from mediation services. I'm not sure it's necessary. I guess I'd ask for a no vote.
Representative Sikora.
You know, why couldn't we send it without recommendation, as you said, to finance? And let us continue working on that and see what we can find out from mediation services. I really don't know what their numbers are.
All right. Representative Daphne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd remind members, if you can understand what I'm saying, I would remind members that the Rules Committee can always keep this moving. And so the motion to re-refer to allow Bureau of Mediation Services to come forward and talk about the impact of this on them does not, in fact, end this bill for the year.
All right. Representative Grilling to this motion?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this motion is what we have to do because I'm very disappointed when we were so close to coming to having Representative Demmer be a statesman and get this all worked out. But I feel like we're having the same conversation that we had last time with the same arguments. And so I'm not confident that this will be worked out just between here and Ed Finance. And it is the duty of the policy committees to work out what I consider very important language here. And, you know, I felt confident we would come here and have a love fest and finally pass it and be done. But now that we're having some of the same discussions again, I'm not. So I think we do have to take our time with this.
All right. I'll take two more comments. Representative Thorne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I, too, have a lot of discomfort with going too fast on making what I think could be a fundamental change in the culture and the whole way that contracts are negotiated. It's not that I'm not open to looking at it. I don't want to be in the position of making a change and then ending up doing more harm than good. I've been concerned from the start that if we too quickly and artificially say negotiations really can't occur, the last thing I would want to happen that I don't think any of us would want to happen would be to have things deteriorate in terms of the discussion that needs to take place so that the following summer people couldn't put together an agreement and then we would see the possibility of more strikes the following fall. I know Representative Demmer and I, you know, discussed that in the past, but because a strike at any time is a terrible thing for everybody. I think to me it's always been a lose-lose for everybody, but a few folks have gotten themselves over the years into that situation. But it's devastating to kids. It might start in the summer. But when does it end and how does it ripple through? And some of the same issues we talked about with the damage done when something occurs in the middle of the year can certainly happen with a breakdown that would start in the summer but could push all sorts of things, seasons and graduation and the rest, into turmoil. So I want to make darn sure that we've had a lot of input on what this could mean and how it could affect that. So I don't think going slower or finding out more is necessarily bad given the magnitude of what we're dealing with here.
Final comment to the motion, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I continue to have real concerns about 7 through 9. Just discussing matters of mutual interest is not going to get us where we need to go because if we're talking about implementing some of the very things that we've talked about and passed on to Finance Committee and this committee, things like QComp and site-based decision-making, all those things require more than just discussing issues. They require formal agreements, memorandums of understanding, potentially even reopening contracts, and all sorts of things that might come up. So this language is far too weak to implement the very things that we've passed here.
Right. Thank you, members. Members, we need to vacate this room at this time, so I am going to recess this meeting. We are scheduled to meet at 6:30, and it will be in one of the downstairs hearing rooms, 5 or 10,
Mr.
and
Chair,
it will be an email.
Mr. Chair,
meeting
Mr. Chair, the motion for the vote is a higher order than a motion to recess, and I'd ask that we have the vote this
I
time.
Don't believe it is, Representative Daphne. I believe the recess puts that vote even further away from the House, for I believe the motion to recess is a higher motion.
I'd ask for a roll call on the motion to recess.
Roll call being requested on the motion to recess.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, with all due respect, Representative Dabney, we have a limited time in which we can meet, and the motion to recess, it's on the issue of when we're going to have more meeting. That does prolong it. I mean, you can debate that, but the I don't understand what you're after, what the point is. Representative Biskins is willing to give us the time to deal with the issue as you proposed, and I don't understand your point because we need to be out of here. We physically can't stay here. So we don't have time for the motion, and we have to recess. So I don't understand your point.
Representative Favney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, my point is simply this. We have a motion in front of us.
Representative Daphne and members of the committee, you know, I think there's been a lot of discussion as to the importance of this issue and the importance of us having a thorough discussion, all right, and having a good discussion. We don't want to move quickly. You know, we want to debate the issue. Right? And, you know, I believed that my motion to recess was going to give us that time necessary, all right, to continue to work on this issue, you know, prior to deadline, which is midnight tonight. And so the motion,
Mr. Chair, do you need a motion to recess? Can't you just recess the meeting?
Staff? Huh? I don't know. It's a good question. Is that a motion?
Mr. Chair?
Advice? Representative Sikora?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's the discretion of the chair. We've never been questioned on a recess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This committee stands in recess.